I'm opening. We have an eye, sort of a nostril, two teeth. One of the teeth has a small cavity. Close call, folks, but I think we got here just in time.
Presented by Maria Menounos and Kevin Undergaro. This is Anatomy of a Movie. In-depth discussions and breakdowns of various movie titles. And now that you've seen the movie, let the dissection begin.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Anatomy of a Movie. Today we are dissecting the fun Disney film, Alexander and the Terrible.
Horrible! No good.
Very bad day.
Yeah.
It took us all morning to nail that.
And we did.
First try.
Hey, all right,
we can go.
We did a really good job on that.
And good night.
Done. All right, we're done. All right, I'm your host, Marissa Serafini. I have a whole panel with me.
I'm Roxy Stryer. Happy to be here.
Hey guys, this is Sarah Stretton.
I'm the luckiest guy in the world because I get a panel with these women.
Yeah.
Dimitri Panos, hello movie fans.
Yes, this was a fun Disney film. Overall, what were your first impressions, Roxy?
You know, I thought it was adorable. Obviously, we aren't the target demo, but I really enjoyed it.
I'm the target demo. I love Disney.
I think you might have liked it, but I don't know if you're the target demo. I thought it was adorable. I really don't have many issues with it. It was short. It was sweet. The message was nice. There were a few things I would tweak, but overall it was good.
I think coming out of the movie, I wasn't exactly thrilled with it. Not because I didn't think it had some very cute scenes. I thought that this movie, its high point was that they had a great sense of making things awkward and uncomfortable.
Sure. Yeah,
and like,
absolutely.
Those were my favorite instances. Right off the back, I'm trying to put my finger on it, but the lead little boy sometimes would he just kind of got under my skin a little.
Yeah.
It kind of bothered me at points, which is a really hard thing to sit through a movie for when they're the lead in a never seen, pretty much. But overall, I did think it had some really cute moments, and I'm excited to talk about it, and because I want to be on your guys' team and be all for
come
this
to
movie.
The light side.
That's what I want. That's what I'm hoping for.
Nice to meet you.
Well, for me, this movie was a pleasant surprise. I really liked it, and for me, it was a definite throwback movie. And my throwback, this is the kind of movie that Disney used to make. Late 60s, all throughout the 70s, this live-action family, like, craziness romp. And, you know, you walked out just feeling good. It was just a good message movie for families and kids. It was it's very safe for families to go to. And at the same time, it was highly entertaining. I didn't have a problem with the kid. I loved the little boy. I thought he was really good. Everybody, actually, I thought, did what they had to do. And Steve Carell and Jennifer Garner together were really fun. And, you know, by the end of the movie, it's like I just walked out of the theater. Is it one of my best of the year? Probably not. But I still had I was entertained at the end of the day. I found that it had charm and heart. And who doesn't suffer from a bad day? And,
everyone.
You know. Everyone.
And I liked how, yes, this movie is based off of the short story by Judith Viorst.
Sure. Oh, you know what?
Roxy can be our book expert on this one.
Okay. It's something really funny that we have to bring up because last we talked about Gone Girl, and it's who read the book? And Roxy, you're almost. Paraphrasing. I don't have time. I'm a movie.
This
TV
is me.
I don't read books.
I mean,
but go ahead.
I'm halfway.
This is a very short story.
I'm halfway to illiterate at this point. It's very sad. We do Maze Runner. We do Gone Girl. I'm like, did I read the book? No, I didn't read the book. This book, not only have I read a million times, but I reread again this morning.
Yep.
So I am here as the resident book expert. For Alexander.
And you can always tell when Roxy is reading because her lips are moving.
Right? Yeah, I'm one of those.
It was just really funny when you said this one I'm the expert on.
I know.
So this is a children's book that's been out
yes,
since the 70s. Have any of you read this book before the movie came out?
Of course.
Other than Roxy.
Oh my gosh, when I went to bed all the time at night, my parents used to read this book to me. I loved this book growing up.
I remember reading it because we had it at my after school. I mostly remember him waking up with gum in his hair.
It's the beginning of the book.
That's the part I remember. I was really confused because going into this movie, they add this whole, you know, wish component, family component. And I was like, I feel like none of this was there before. And that's because it's not.
And it wasn't.
But I did read this book as a kid. I cannot say that I've reread it. I have not read it in years. But I definitely, it's in my past.
I'll be honest, I didn't, this book escaped me back then. I was going to the Disney movies, not reading these books, which would eventually become a Disney
movie. So the roles have reversed.
The roles have reversed, yeah.
Where were
The Hobbit and Hunger Games and Gone Girl?
Fancy you.
Fancy Schmancy.
Big franchise books.
So I thought that they did a pretty good job keeping this book and being true to it in some sense, but then expanding on it, obviously. If we had just stuck to the book, this movie would have been even shorter than it actually was. We're coming in at 81 minutes, and we added an entire storyline on. If we had just stopped at him having a bad day, it wouldn't have made for such a great movie. Perhaps a short, and maybe would have been about 25 minutes.
Well, they have. You hit the nail on the head. They have made this before. It was, I believe, HBO. And it was, and it was 25 minutes, Rox.
Hey.
You're great with your estimation.
Just brilliant.
So this hasn't made, but this is a whole new vamped up version to really make it character-driven, family-driven, instead of just centered on just one kid.
Yeah, they stuck with the gum in the hair. They stuck with the best friend who ends up having another best friend.
Right.
Pretty much that was about, he had siblings in it, and he had this obsession with Australia. Mm-hmm. He kept saying in the book, it was like, maybe I'll just go live in Australia. He said it about four times. Mm-hmm. So I like that they added that aspect. Obviously,
how ironic, too, that the lead actor is from Australia.
Do you think it's ironic, or do you think it had something to do with the casting? Do you think they were like, ooh, this
I think it was totally coincidental. I mean, irony in the fact that they made this movie and the lead's from Australia.
Yeah, and the director, Miguel Arteta, he said that when he was casting for the lead role, he didn't really want Hollywood kids who grew up in this area who's, like, tainted by Hollywood. I know that sounds terrible, but he wanted a kid who was genuine and authentic and have heart.
I think that sounds terrible.
Yeah,
and he said when he was auditioning kids from Hollywood, he would ask them basic generic questions like, what's your favorite food? And they would say sushi, which is very Los Angeles type of
my stepsister totally would have said that. 100%. 100% would have said that.
The director wanted a kid who's like a normal, heartfelt kid. Pizza.
And he wanted a kid, too, that thought well of others and thought of others. Mm-hmm. Like, the director's turning point, like where he said the kids hired is apparently he took them out bowling, and he said, "I can't even pronounce the kid's name, his last name."
Oxenbowl.
Apparently,
I'm looking at it and I can't say it.
Yeah.
She can read. Be fair.
Isn't that nice? So the director took the kids out bowling, and he goes, I pretty much hired him on, he would cheer when anybody else knocked down a pin. Like, if anybody else knocked down a pin, he'd be, yeah! And he goes, that's the kid that I wanted. He goes, I wanted a kid who would think well of others, and he was perfect. So I think that bowling was his, was his barometer.
I feel like I need to, I already mentioned my feelings for his, Ed's portrayal of this character, and I will say that I think he did a fantastic job with getting rid of his accent. Most people I don't think would know that. Also, I think that it does read that he has a heart and that he cares, and listening to him speak, he has so much energy and he seems like he'd be fun to work with. And I think that the scenes he nailed were actually some of the harder scenes.
Mm-hmm.
I thought those ones, I was like, oh, I can see why they cast him. I could see how he could pull out a really strong audition. Mm-hmm. And he is interesting to watch on camera. Where he lost it for me is a lot of times on, like, the very simple scenes, or, like, when he had a lot of interactions with Becky.
Oh, okay.
And those moments were just, like, escaping me and didn't feel as just natural everything. But he did so well with... I almost like the quote-unquote, like, tougher material.
Can you put
script.
Your finger on, you said less natural, but was it like a facial expression he was making in those scenes, or just kind of forced?
I would have to rewatch it.
But it was something
that it pulled me out.
I would say
when
that,
something wasn't drastically happening, when it wasn't really high energy.
I would agree. Like, I mean, I think the girl that played Becky, too, I see what you're saying, Sydney Fulmer. And again, not that she did a bad job, but I think that their chemistry together, compared to everybody else, theirs was for want of not being insulting to kids. I think that those two's chemistry wasn't the strongest compared to the chemistry that everybody else had with each other.
I agree, and I think it also kind of goes with the casting. Ed himself, he is a short little young man. I mean, because he is only 12, I believe, in this film. And then when we cast a girl opposite him who's so much taller than he was, even physically, I don't even think they were on the same level. Which really helped with the pairing wasn't right.
I felt like she was the older girl he didn't have a shot with kind of thing when I was watching this. It doesn't have to do with their looks per se. It's more their attitude. I wanted her to be a little mousy, a little shy, or a little like wispier. I don't know. She was just seemed so not into it sometimes. So I will agree with those moments. They weren't quite there for me. But then again,
in the end, when I was talking about romantic comedy.
Yeah, exactly. So it didn't really matter. But I am curious about that audition process and whether he was cast and then she was brought in and if they saw the chemistry or whether they were just like, these are two talented kids.
She didn't go bowling.
It's just like, they could, I don't know. It's just they can count. Maybe my expectations are too high. I watched My Girl recently, you know.
So I'm just, such a great film.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm just
a more serious film.
Yes.
On the other hand.
But the chemistry in that film was much more important.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
True.
Which, and it was more focused on just those two.
Yes. So I just want to clear it up, though. It was hard for me to watch, but I do think that he's a really sweet kid, and I can totally see why he was hired.
And again, I'll point to a scene that had the both of them together, but it still worked. It was hysterical. It was a scene where he sets the chemistry lab on fire. That scene was done really funny. And I think as a director, Miguel Arteta, first off, he breaks like some of the cardinal rules of like film. You never film with animals, never film with children, never. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he did it all in this, and he was able to contain it in an 81-minute movie. And there was bedlam, chaos, mayhem going on in scenes, and he was able to like reel it in just really nice, like that scene in the chemistry class where everything's lighting up on fire, and it was just like, and the kids just like, oh, this sucks.
What a jerk of a teacher, though, that the first thing they do is get angry. Like, what about, are you guys okay? Are you on fire? Right. Anything?
Whose fault is this?
I think it's an interesting point that you brought that up, though, Dimitri, about him, the animals, and doing all this stuff. I was reading this review. I watched a lot of reviews on this movie, and there's one that called this the hangover of kids' movies, because we open up with the animal, and then we have to try to figure out how we got there.
I thought that was clever. That comparison. And again, I also like the time shift as well, because I didn't know what was on the other side of that door. All I know is I heard the kids' over voice. You see this car pulling in, and like this family just comes out, and they're like beat, and they open the door, and it's like, hey, it's 24 hours earlier.
Yeah, absolutely.
I liked how they add the non-linear aspect. And going back to the Disney throwback, I mean, you look at movies like Freaky Friday. And not the Jamie Lee Curtis, Lindsay Lohan. No, I'm talking about the original. I think it was Barbara Harris, Jodie Foster. And a lot of these Disney movies, they start on a kid's wish. Or they start on a wish.
Mm-hmm. And got some mystical aspect to it.
Something. And so as soon as the kid made the wish, I'm going, okay, that's the Disney way. Like, since Freaky Friday. And then
Or even those made-for-TV movies that they were doing.
Yeah, Wish Upon a Star.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know, even... And I love how they negate the wish later on in the movie, so that we know that there isn't any supernatural, but it's like, come on, you know, like his father
you
says
put it in. It was nice.
Right. It was like, as much as it would be cool to have that power, it's not your fault.
I really liked that moment as well. I just really liked that they put the nod to the history, but then they're also like, guys, we know that this isn't really what it is.
Right.
But you have to understand that this is part of the Disney magic.
So yeah. And, you know, yeah. And then, of course, putting Dick Van Dyke in the movie. I mean, you know. Okay, so you get, right, you get Mary Poppins. But people also forget that he was in another popular
movie.
He was in another popular Disney flick, like family movie called Lieutenant Robinson Crusoe USN, which was just the retelling of Robinson Crusoe. And he was great in that movie. And he's had such a history with Disney that he still loves to this day. So getting him to do the movie, that like capped it off for me. You know, and
I was surprised when we actually saw him.
Same here.
I was surprised. I was thinking they were just going to kind of allude to him a bunch of times. And then when he showed up, I was like, oh.
And then when he read.
Well, we went there.
And then he took
a dump in his head. And then he dumped it.
I loved that. And I was like, I'd get funny. That book. That's like everybody poops.
I know.
You know? One hump camel makes one hump poop. I read that book as a kid.
Two hump camel make a two hump.
Yeah, exactly.
Another book you read.
It's still above my toilet right now. No joke. Sarah can attest to that.
I can attest to that. That is an actual fact.
Hey, just saying.
So we know you've read two books.
So go ahead and take that dump.
Take that dump.
In the pool.
And that was a funny scene.
On the bed.
On the bed, on your head.
I'm surprised they took it that far, though. Yes, it was funny, but to have someone as iconic as Dick Van Dyke read something as crazy and absurd as that,
yeah.
I'm surprised Disney took it that far.
I think that he agreed. He gets it. They got it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, because it's funny that you say that, because another thing that the director was brought up to the director about, there's the scene in the car with Jennifer Gardner.
The penis
mother,
scene!
The penis.
The
and she's
penis
like, I've seen all your penises.
I love
and
that.
And I was like, oh, wow, that's... Okay, we're 2014 in a Disney movie. Like, but it was done in a way... It was done in almost a similar way in E.T. where, you know, Elliot says, shut up, penis breath! Like, there's nothing that was... There's nothing that was malicious about the way she said penis.
Right.
It was just like, enough. I've seen all your penises here.
That was funny. And then he's like, yes, she has.
Yes,
true.
Yes, she has. It's true.
It's one of my favorite scenes in the entire thing.
And it catches you a little bit off guard. But it's funny nonetheless. And there's nothing that I took away from it that was considered to be, I don't know, controversial or anything.
Right.
You know,
if you were just listening to this audio and there was no visual to go along with it, you would think maybe another scene was going on.
You
if she's in a car. I've seen all your penises.
I've seen all your penises.
Oh, have you?
It was a different movie.
Very true, very true. Let's talk about the family in the casting.
Yeah.
Jennifer Garner, Steve Carell. I mean, we got some
great
lineup for this film.
Mm-hmm.
And the director, Miguel, he wanted a family that felt authentic. And when they all first met for the first time, they bonded and they really did feel like a family.
I think that it was a little bit, I mean, they were such a good family that I was like, oh, come on, nobody can be like that. But I thought that Steve Carell and Jennifer Garner did an amazing job in this movie because they so easily could have just been whatever about it. They
have
such incredible careers. Does this movie really matter to them? No. But I thought that they had a great relationship. It wasn't like, let's make out every 2 seconds. Obviously, we're in a Disney movie. We do get one very sweet kiss. They supported each other. They were each other's rocks. They rooted for each other. That's what Disney is. I really enjoyed their chemistry. I thought it was great.
And I think they can bring a parental fun family aspect to their characters as well.
Yeah, and Roxy, I think you nailed it on the head too, because they weren't there for the paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
They
mm-hmm.
obviously, well, they each have their own families, and I think that they obviously, hey, we're going to make a fun movie. We're going to make a movie that my kids can go to.
That was definitely something Jennifer Garner actually said. Like, she wanted to work with Steve Carell, so that added to their chemistry. And she did say that between her and Ben Affleck, they don't have a lot of material that their kids can see.
Sure.
So she really was excited to put something out there that her family could watch and appreciate. Steve Carell was kind of like, I just do whatever.
Their chemistry together works. You know, and again, you say like they're almost too perfect of a family, and that is a Disney thing.
I
can't fault it because, again,
it didn't bother.
It's the charm. It really is the charm, and you can say, well, you know, it's nice that something can be out there that's where, you know, the couple is supportive of one another. And let's think about it. Another reason for me why this was refreshing. The past couple of movies we've talked about, man, boy, howdy, have they been knee slappers.
Yeah.
You know, from like things like Gone Girl.
such a healthy relationship, yeah, I mean, you know?
Right.
So, just really good, healthy relationships we talk about.
Right. And even though this isn't a relationship movie, it is a family movie, it was sort of kind of refreshing to, like, see something that was, like, that was light, fluffy, but charming in heart.
And that's the thing, though, but you do take away that they had a great family and they're very happy. But what they did in the course of the movie that didn't, is they added two moments for me that were really important. You got the bedroom scene of the two of them together where she's like, you haven't been working for 7 months.
He's like, it's been amazing. And she's like, what do you mean? You haven't had a job.
And there is a grip of like reality of there is a scene. And he does say, he says it's basically a choice.
Yeah.
He talks about that in the scene. And then later
we see him.
Yes. And but later also when we see him kicking the trash can.
Love that. That was great.
Again, it's a really good scene.
When he finally was like, this sucks. This day sucks.
And then also, and that's on top of the fact that it was at one point his kid pointed out that you don't have to be so positive all the time.
Right.
So they did create this very happy family that was functional all in all through the chaos. But they added in these moments of like, but they're choosing to be happy.
And I go back, if you go back and watch some of those older Disney movies, they all have that. Even though there's bedlam and chaos going around, like even in a Freaky Friday, there is, like, the father has sympathy. The mother at the end, there's this learning curve. Even in, like, a movie like Super Dad.
Right.
Like, you know that the parents are doing it for good intentions. And yet, at the end, they realize that the kid might have a point or whatever. In this movie, like you said, it really drove it home nicely.
Right. I think that, and not to say anything less than amazing about Jennifer Garner, because I thought she was great, but what's interesting to me about Steve Carell is his career has gone in a place that I never really pictured it going, and I think he's so incredible. And, you know, this coming out, we're about to go into Foxcatcher, which is like seeing an actor who can do this, who can do that, all of those things. It's nice that we have him in this Disney movie, and now we're about to see him in something very different. I think he's really talented, and people might have underestimated him at first that he was capable of such a wide range.
Yeah, for me, Little Miss Sunshine turned things around a lot. But
he's very funny in that way. He can go from a very raunching film such as 40-Year-Old Virgin to, and he even did Evan Almighty a few years ago, which was a very family-oriented Disney film.
Yeah.
So, and to have another movie like that, it's great for his career, and it really shows his versatility as an actor.
Absolutely.
And as a comedian actor. And he even has other films that he played the dramatic roles. Mm-hmm. So I think he's really great in that aspect. And we know Jennifer Garner can do no wrong.
And if I can say, regarding Jennifer Garner, if she's watching, well, awesome. but look, I'm going to be flat out honest. I was never a fan. I'll be honest. I was never.
You never watched Alias?
No, not with any regularity. Here's my thing. She was too toned. She intimidated me.
Like, in this movie, or in life?
But back in like the Alias days, any woman that could like I could see physically beat me up, but she looked physical. Like she had muscles, and that wasn't like attractive to me. I will say, as she's gotten older, she's become quite charming and more appealing to me. And because I didn't watch,
you felt like she was too cold.
Yeah, there was just something about her, even when she was in Felicity, because I think she was in Felicity for a little bit too. There was just something about her that wasn't appealing to me. As she's gotten older, maybe the movie roles that she's taken, she's become more attractive and appealing as an actress. And when I see her in a movie like this, or even The Odd Life of Timothy Green,
she's adorable in that too.
Yeah, I just like go, okay, I misjudged. So she's winning me over slowly and surely, and I really enjoyed seeing her in this movie. I thought she was a lot of fun.
I've always been a big fan of Jennifer Garner from Alias.
Because you love women who can kick other people's butts.
I love strong female leads.
I do too.
They're awesome. They're people to look forward to and inspirational.
But I was watching Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Same here.
And to me, I would rather go
Sarah Michelle Gellar route.
Then I don't know. There was just something about Jen Gardner. She seemed a little harsh. But that's all. But she's changed my viewpoint about
maybe because she had children.
Perhaps
maybe more nurturing aspect. Let's talk more about the kids in this film. I thought they all played great parts, too. Mm-hmm. Other than, I mean, we talked a little bit about Ed Oxenbould, but let's talk about...
Well, Sarah talked a lot about Ed, but I know that Dimitri really liked Ed, so I just wanted to give him a chance to say that.
Well, I did like him because there was something about him. He had a spunk. He was like... It was the way that he talked. He had an energy about him, and I liked the way that he talked, and he seemed like a real kid to me, like, and he also seemed to have a little bit of courage. Like, even though he was having this really bad day, the way that he would talk to people or his enthusiasm about being with his best friend, and I just liked that. And there was something, even the way he talked out of the side of his mouth didn't, like, annoy...
The lisp?
Yeah, there was just something about that kid where I was, like, going... Oh, he's sort of kind of a cool kid. Like, I get it. Like, I don't know why I shouldn't be bonding with a 12-year-old, but there was something about him that I connected with.
I agree.
He was cool.
But let me ask you. So I do agree. I'm not as in love with him as you were, but I didn't dislike him in the ways that Sarah did. So I'm somewhere in between. I thought that he did a good job. What else could you see him playing? Is my question. What else would he be cast
playing? He's the, like, boy genius.
A boy genius, a geek, a nerd kind of a character. You know, just
the awkward underdog that you're here for.
Okay. I could see him as like a, if you're going to redo, not that he, well, you know what? It's funny that I just thought about this because I was thinking, God, if you were going to bring back the Goonies, that's Sean Astin's son.
I really hope that we're never remaking the Goonies.
No.
It's
I'm not saying remaking it.
I also don't agree with that. I love the Goonies, and I don't see him as his son.
Oh, I see him as Mikey's son. I mean, like, I was thinking, like, because the whole process, they're not going to, from what I understand, the whole thing is not to remake the Goonies, but to get the original cast back in one way, shape, or form.
I don't know. I've heard reboot. I've heard a lot of things.
But in any case, I was thinking he could play Mikey's son.
Okay.
Interesting. Okay.
Okay.
Let's talk about a little bit about the Anthony, who played by Dylan Minnette. I've seen him in a few things. Rocky, you've seen him in Scandal.
Yeah.
Teenager aspect, too.
Absolutely. He was a very different character in Scandal. I think he's talented. He's been in a bunch of things for somebody his age.
Absolutely.
I thought he did a great job. I was rooting for his character. A little unrealistic that he would miss his prom, but that's not an actor choice. I thought that he nailed it.
I missed my prom.
But not because of this.
Yeah, it was exactly
what you know what I mean? It's not unrealistic that somebody wouldn't go to their prom. It's unrealistic that somebody would be on their way to their prom and be like, no.
I think he made the choice, again, from the way that the movie had set it up. I agree that, like, but it wasn't, he did say, because I was thinking the same thing. It's like, wow, he's going to miss, like, on his prom.
But then he said, it's my junior prom.
Because it's my junior prom. Yeah. It's not the real thing. And plus, we knew that things aren't going to work out between him and the girl. So I was able to buy it.
Celia was a mean girl.
She was just
played by Bella Thorne.
Selfish,
she's great.
Egotistic.
No, she was mean.
Yeah,
the actress, Bella Thorne, she was great.
Oh, I wanted to punch her in the face. I thought we were going to see a character arc with her. Maybe she was going to come around being like, I love your crazy family.
Right.
We did not get that.
No, which is fine. No,
but that helped Anthony character have
grow
a character
up.
Arc mm-hmm. and realize, yes, he's having a bad day, but he's going to choose his family over this girl who's being petty.
And
right
like this, the one thing about Dylan that I'll give him good props for is he could have overplayed his part. Like, he was cocky without being hateable. Like, I didn't hate him. I actually found some of his some of his lines were like, there was a little
hashtag
bit of charm.
#bless.
Right, because, hashtag bless. Like,
oh my gosh.
You could have hated him.
But
like, hated hashtag bless.
Sarah,
I hated hashtag bless too, but I mean, he could have gone well over. Like, he could have really hated him. Like, he was in Let Me In and he plays a jerk. And
he
was
great
him.
In that film.
Yeah, but he just sort of kind of, he walked the line for me because I didn't end up hating the kid. He was sort of kind of funny.
I applaud the actor because he was very sweet, and I thought he did a great job with the dialogue he was given.
Yeah.
And I think some of the dialogue he was given was so difficult, especially between him and Sheila, because it was like, literally, hashtag blessed.
Right.
I love that.
I love it.
Because you're not on Twitter.
I hated hashtag like, blessed, and I
hated. You hated XOXO?
Family.
XOXO.
Family.
Less is Fami?
Fami. Oh my God.
I love Fami.
I think the fun thing with his character, he can, I mean, it kind of makes this movie timely because with the whole hashtag whatever, but he can really speak to the younger audience right now. And that was his character, because I felt like this film with the casting, we had the adults that could relate, we had the teenagers, and then we had the kids. We had all these demographics in one film.
Yeah,
I thought that he did a really good job. I love those little lines, hashtag blessed. I think it's adorable. I think it's something that the kids that I would babysit for would love. Like, oh, hashtag. I just think it's sweet. It's a little bit of a cop-out because obviously it's not the most advanced form of writing, but I think
and
it's
also
great.
I just don't think it's accurate to what he would actually say. But I mean, that's...
oh, I did. I totally did. I saw
I didn't
it.
Believe it.
Oh, I thought it was adorable.
Yeah, see, and it's not that I didn't believe it, but he was given enough more where he still can come off as being like charming or likable.
If we didn't like him, we would have had a problem. Yeah. We would have had a
exactly.
problem. So
totally.
I was rooting for him because he was the guy who was feeling good to have the hot girl. It wasn't like he was the big jock who was like, of course I'm with the hot girl.
Exactly.
So,
and when he gets the zit on his forehead, it's like, how can you, right there, that's a real thing that happens.
Yeah.
That, like, why on this day do I have a target on my head?
Yeah. And it's the Band-Aid.
You might want to go with the Band-Aid for that. And the driving lesson was, I thought, really funny. Actress from American Pie.
And from Legally Blonde.
Yeah. Oh my God.
I always want to call her
Jennifer
Snap.
Coolidge.
Jennifer Coolidge.
Yes, she was
awesome
so funny.
Cameo.
Yeah.
And she was just, that scene was great.
The DMV. Great. I know JTE actually has a little bit about this particular scene. JTE, take it away.
Yeah, that DMV is a bank at the end of my street. And every day I would leave to go to work, I would see them out there with their minivan. The family Crow would just be sitting there between shots with, like, the door ripped off. Does the door get ripped off?
Yeah.
So it's kind of cool to see Steve Crow every day.
Located in
That's
Los
funny.
Angeles.
Yeah.
That's hysterical.
All those listening.
Yeah. I know that some people really had an issue with the fact that this family was so affluent that they weren't upset about the van being destroyed.
Okay, I'm going to ask you that, too, because... If had they gone an angry route, then it would have been a different story.
Dynamic.
And I don't think kids and adults would like an angry situation. You have to deal with it in a more positive way. And plus, we know the mother's has a very good job. She makes good money. And then even the father, he used to be this
aerospace. Yeah.
So they're well with money right now.
And again,
that's the least of their issues.
Again, I'm just going to go back. There's always property damage in those Disney movies. I mean, that's part of the mayhem. Like, you don't go, I don't go into a movie, yes, he's going to, I see the minivan taking out, like, meters and stuff like that.
You hit every meter.
Like that. And how did you hit every single?
You also,
and again, that's funny to me.
And you also just, like, let your believability go a little bit. I mean, if you want to get that nitpicky, it's like, okay, then where's the scene with the cops coming to, like, give you tickets for all, like, there's a whole bunch that, like, would have to actually happen if you did have that big of a car wreck.
Yeah.
Like, that it was that extreme. It would have gone, you know, so you just, it's a Disney movie.
It's supposed
to be funny, like...
Let's take it there for one second. So, say that this movie, instead, he gets in this, the cops come, the parents disown him, they throw him out of the house. Like, how... What good is that? So, it baffles me that people were really upset about that.
Right.
Because what on earth was this movie supposed to do?
Yeah, and I would argue that then you've never seen this type of movie before. Because it really isn't about... You know, there's got to be a little bit of that chaos in there because it's funny. But then again, the father does say, "Did you have to hit every? Like, how did you hit every single?"
Yeah.
And they watched it all play out.
It's more baffled.
And it's also like the vehicle itself had a bad day. It started off with the battery dead, and then it went through the whole DMV.
Dude, the vehicle was a character, for
sure.
Exactly.
The vehicle was a character itself. And so that was having a bad day.
Yeah.
Just add
more
to it.
Poor minivan.
And I liked Karis Dorsey.
You didn't even talk about her.
I loved her Peter Pan performance.
Oh, my God. That was awesome.
I loved her Peter Pan performance.
Oh, you mean when she was high off the meds?
Yes. Cough syrup.
Yeah. Cough syrup.
Great.
Wish I was there.
Stellar.
Seeing it in the audience would have given given it a standing ovation.
I love the brother again.
That's what I was going to say.
You nailed it. He was so proud of her.
Oh, he believes it. He thinks she knocked it out of the park. Like, if he had seen that on Broadway, she nailed it.
You nailed it. High five. That was awesome. And it wasn't an insult. He truly, honestly felt.
I thought that was great. I thought her performance was awesome. I think she's very talented. There was a couple moments where I just realized that she was on point. One of them was when they pulled up to the house and we saw it at the beginning, then we saw it again after everything had happened. And just the way she kind of like was smiling to herself, like, oh, this is, I don't know, just if you watch her facial expression through the movie, I thought that she was really on point in a way you wouldn't expect.
She was really good. And then, you know, the Peter Pan performance leads up to, you know, the vomiting scene, which leads up to the punchline.
Good aim.
Always willing to take a bow.
When did she start to eating carrots?
Right.
Like, you know, I don't know. It was, again, the movie had enough of those moments that I was just, okay, I bought my ticket. I'm here for the ride. I'm really having a much better than I could have anticipated ride for myself. And she was on point. And I think that the family chemistry was, you know, really, really worked. Mm-hmm. And so when all the kids at the end, like, they each had, with the exception of Alexander, everybody else was like living high. Everybody was like living La Vida Loca there. They're like, I've got this job interview. Hey, all right. Hey, I could be VP. Hey, I'm going to the prom and I'm getting my driver's license and I'm the lead in Peter Pan. And I just set my class on fire. But when they all have that bad day and they come together as a family, it works.
And I know that the chemistry between them was really good offset, too. Like, there's been said that they made some sort of blood pact or some sort of pact.
Like
that,
some Angelina Jolie, Billy Bob Thornton stuff.
And Dylan and Karis,
they got ink.
They all said that they were going to only make movies together in the future. This obviously got broken very quickly as Ed then booked another film, and so did Dylan. But they were like talking about how they wanted to just make like side cameos in each other's films.
That's great.
And just like be like the extras that like drive by. So they got along fantastically through shooting and like really had a good time. I know there's a scene in there that they all kind of not are embarrassed about, but a little bit, where they didn't realize they were all on camera and they're in the background of the shot dancing. I believe it is supposed to be, it's a two shot, but it's a wide of Steve Carell and Jennifer Garner at the party. Mm-hmm. And in the back, all the kids are dancing, and I guess they did not know they were on camera. So when they watched this film, all of them, heads were in their hands in embarrassment.
That's awesome.
So you can go back and find that when you rewatch.
But thank you, Sarah. That's awesome.
And you bring up another, like, that great scene where, so the party's going on and the thunder from down there comes up and they're like, and the parents are like horrified. He's like, PG, you gotta keep it PG. And the guys are like going, not a problem.
Yeah.
I love that because they're like, okay, no worries.
I thought this was awesome, especially, so we were just talking about the penis scene, and now we're going to this. These were scenes that were just appropriate enough to make it into this movie, and they're doing the dance, and I have a feeling if I was a 10-year-old kid going to this, I really wouldn't have known what was going on there. And when the parents are laughing, I would have been like, oh, this is so funny. They're doing a dance. But now, obviously, being an adult, I'm sitting there with the parents with my head like, oh, God.
Oh, God, this is going to
be
bad.
Oh, my God, no, this can't go bad. How are you going to go south here? So I thought that was really cute. And that the fact that they were like, in for it. They're like, all right, we'll keep our shirts on.
Yeah, I have a question for you guys. What do you think would probably be the funniest moments as a kid watching this? Because, like, for me, it was in, like, the awkward moments, in the family moments, in, like, the extremely awkward musical car ride that I was embarrassed to be a part of.
That was amazing.
Yeah. I was so uncomfortable that I was like, this is great because I, like, am so uncomfortable. But so I was just, like, wondering because I wasn't in a theater surrounded by kids. I was like, I wonder what the kids are laughing out loud with.
I was in a theater. I was the only person in entire theater. And I was, like, laughing and then looking around. And I was like, oh, right. It's I'm the only one here.
It's my big living room.
What about you?
For me, it would be a couple. The Peter Pan thing was really funny. But I would go as a kid, you know, when she said, I've seen all your penises, I would have been like, she's a penis. Yeah. That's the funniest thing ever. Stuff like that.
With the alligator.
when the kangaroo. And it kicks him in the chest, like as a kid, I would have found that hysterical. You know, any of the slapstick.
The catching on fire.
Yeah, I love the slapstick.
Like any of the zany slapstick stuff, as a kid, that's one of the reasons why I saw like the computer wore tennis shoes of the strongest man in the world is because of that.
I loved when Alexander like tripped over that one thing in the yard.
Sprinkler.
Yeah, the sprinkler.
Yeah.
Seriously.
And he fell in his face.
I always laugh at that.
The music was playing and then it stops.
Yeah, boom. Yeah.
I
laughed out loud at that.
I thought it was funny. I would have definitely thought as a kid that the funniest moment was Jennifer Gardner on the bike and she's like trying to get, she's riding the bike and she's trying to get off the bike and she runs in and trying to help. That kind of thing was really funny to me. I still thought it was funny, but.
The audience that I was in, because I'm always surrounded by people, everyone laughed at the Peter Pan musical and her just flying around like a crazy person. Being part of musical productions and to actually witness something like that would be hysterical.
Oh, yeah.
Hysterical.
Oh, yeah. I just, honestly, how do I pay for my old middle school or high school to do that production that?
Yeah.
That's what I want. That's all I want.
When your lead actor just went just completely off
syrup. Hey, do you feel sick? Can I have some cough syrup? Yeah.
I'm going to start doing that. I'm just going to go around town with cough syrup.
The best, worst
Just kidding.
You nailed it.
I love it. But
The scene in the scene at the Japanese restaurant too.
Yes.
I would have laughed at
that. Yes, that's what we're talking about, lighting himself on fire.
Still have arms.
Yeah, still have, you know, but putting his arms in the, you know, putting his arms in the big fish tank, which I thought was going to be filled with like piranha or something.
Yeah, me too.
But I'm glad they didn't go there, but that whole scene played funny. And had I not been a Seinfeld fan, the puffy shirt, you know, like, to me, that was a direct homage to the puffy shirt episode of Seinfeld, where he had to wear a pirate shirt. And he shows up to the interview with that. And I don't know.
It's kind of cool.
Let's talk a little bit about the cameos. Megan Mullally.
Yeah.
Right.
Love her.
She's awesome. Yeah, obviously.
She's freaking hysterical. And I loved how she played a mean boss in this film.
And her hair.
Very fun.
Her hair, which was outrageous. What was with the hair? Yeah, that was cool. She does that character well. And we saw it done well again.
And she plays a mean character in Parks and Rec as well. I mean, she's just always fun to watch no matter what kind of role that she played.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then we also had Donald Glover from Community. He played a fun part in this film, being the guy who's hiring Steve Carell for the job.
Oh, right.
Yeah, he was really good. The drama professor.
That's what I'm trying to find his character name.
Yeah, he's definitely, he was from Pacific Rim, what I remember him most from recently. He was
Burn Gorman.
Yeah, it was fun to see him in that role.
Yeah, I thought that there were some great little cameos.
Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah, and we've also talked about Dick Van Dyke. There were a lot of fun cameos that I didn't expect in this film.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what happens when you have huge stars attached to something like Steve Carell, Jennifer Gardner, you know. I noticed that with all of these people. I really think that they just call their buddies and they're like, hey, want to pop in for this? Hey, how do you feel about coming in for this? And once you know that somebody's attached to a project like that, people are more willing to drop in for cameos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and again, I have to go back to and give Miguel Arteta, is that how you pronounce his last name?
The director?
Yeah.
Arteta.
So I thought he did a really good job. And all things considered, like the various stages that this movie has been through, the book came out in 1973, I believe, and it's taken this long for it to be a film, you know, and it went through various stages. They had
different directors even
attached.
Lisa Cholodenko, who did...
The Kids Are Alright.
Yeah, The Kids Are Alright. Yeah. She was originally attached to this film. And
they pick a guy that does Chuck and Buck. And, like, you know, talk about an awkward, can be uncomfortable movie. You know, to have all these pieces fall into place the way that they did, and then have it be a Disney movie. Alan Horn, the new head of Disney, you know, and even Miguel had said, yeah, we wanted to, they actually do admit that we wanted to go back. You know, because those movies, like, I grew up watching as a kid, and we wanted that innocence, and we wanted to have the energy that those movies had. And I really think that they brought together a great crew of people. With their actors and actresses.
I think it was bright. I think it was family oriented. I think that this must have been a very fun set to be on. A part of it really does seem collaborative, and that people really like just cared and wanted to have a good time. When we found out earlier today that they used some of their actors on their soundtrack, I was really surprised at first. But now that I'm thinking about it, I do feel like it really does fit this movie. I think that just shows how it was made. For those of you guys who don't know, the song we played at the very beginning is, what's it called? Surf, Don't Drown,
but that's not what we played at the beginning.
I spoiled it. We're going to end with Surf, Surf, Don't Drown.
Now you're just giving away all of our secrets.
Worst day ever. The worst best day ever, I think, is the name of that song.
But both,
and it was sung by Karis Dorsey and her I'm going to say sister, which is really fun. Mm-hmm. And then, well, when we wrap up, we have
Dylan
Minnette has his own band.
And then bringing those into the movie to that, so you're just like, you know, I feel like that's such a very family-friendly Disney thing to do.
Right. Of course, we see a lot of Disney stars that also become musically gifted. Yeah, that can sing.
That's like a prerequisite to be hired for Disney. You have to be able to sing.
I mean, let's just start with Hannah Montana. They're always doing
even
things
before
like
Hannah Montana.
Yeah, yeah. Of course, I'm just giving an example, but I'm saying that they do it all the time. I'm not shocked at all that they did it, but it is very nice to have a production support their actors.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was surprised with Karis Dorsey. I didn't know she could sing, and then when she's singing a little bit in this film rehearsing for her role, I was like, she has a great voice. And then knowing that she's actually part of a band and they used her music,
and then Dimitri told us
She's in Moneyball. She plays Brad Pitt's or Billy Bean's daughter, and she sings that song as well. I had forgotten that she was in Moneyball, and but it was like, oh, okay, so she can sing too. I didn't know that that the cast was so heavily involved with the soundtrack, but I agree with you. In doing the family, if a family is going to research or find that out, I think it's good for the kids. And,
She's good, man. She's been in a lot of stuff between Moneyball. People most recently know her for Ray Donovan, being on Brothers and Sisters, all that stuff. She's been in a lot of stuff. I'm thinking she's really going to be something. She already is something.
Yeah,
but
she has a great career, and it's only about to go up and up.
Yeah.
So we should talk, we can talk a little bit about, like, from what I understand, production, it was about 40 days to shoot, which for this movie, not too bad.
Not bad at all.
You know, you're looking at a total budget of P&A for $60 million. The actual production budget is around $28 million. So for a Disney movie, $28 million when you have Jennifer Garner and Steve Carell?
Exactly.
Again, so not in it for the paycheck.
Yeah, so you know, it opened up number 3 at the box office, but it did $18.3 million. So, and again, when you're thinking about it, how many live action family movies are there out there? I mean,
we're about to get a big wave of like more family movies when we get Big Hero 6 coming out.
Yeah, but that's animated. I'm having a good live action. You know, a lot of them today because it,
Dolphin Tale.
Dolphin, yeah.
That's true.
No, you're right. No, I mean, you're right about Dolphin Tale 2. But just nice to see something like this. And 18.3 isn't that bad. It's done so far, estimated about $25 million domestically, not too shabby, and about $27 million worldwide. So
do you think it's gonna make back its money?
I think it'll make back its money, and then on the ancillary markets, I think it's a movie that'll continue to play out.
The ratings, what are the,
so we're on Rotten Tomatoes, and we've got a 64 for and then a 69 for audience score, which
pretty
is
consistent.
Pretty you know, it didn't splat. It's
being also that the people most likely rating aren't
adults, yeah, yes. Absolutely. And most likely the people who are going on giving audience scores are also not children. I think that it did decently. I think it did exactly what it should have done.
Yeah, I mean,
I would have given up to a 70, but
well, it dropped 2 points 60s. Because when I did my notes, it was at 66%. But its cinema score was an A-, which means, you know, when you're pulling the people coming out, and that I'm sure the people polling are not just polling adults, they're
right,
polling
of course,
kids. So, and A- is actually really,
that's
a studio
good.
Looks at it as being very good because
pretty
they
good.
Feel it will perpetuate some good word of mouth. So I didn't see it on the weekend. I saw it yesterday afternoon, and I expected to be alone, but a couple of families ended up coming in. I was like, oh, so you played hooky to take your kids to this. It's like, okay.
That's adorable.
Gonna,
great.
Yeah, I'm not going to.
Good parents.
Yeah.
Miss Resident Book Expert.
Yes. Yes, sir.
Being that you read the book, do you feel like the movie like had the same theme and the same message as what you got out of the original story?
Not exactly, to be honest, but I think that that's okay. This wasn't something that you really need to stick to, but at the end of the book, he's kind of like, oh, my parents tell me that everybody has bad days, even in Australia, which is, I guess, a little different because in the movie we have the whole family. I wish this upon you, and I think he's probably wishing he didn't wish that upon his family, which is a whole different message, you know, not wishing negativity upon other people because that you love them, which we didn't get in the book at all. But overall, I think that they were both really cute, and they both started in similar ways with the gum in the hair.
Uh-huh. There we go. Yeah. Yeah. Were you... Being this is a short story and they had to add more for the storytelling and padding of everything, were you upset with any changes that they made from the book to the film?
No, not really. The sibling situation was a little different. I thought they could have added some more hints in of the book. Just talking about who the teacher's names and different locations or different illustrations, I thought maybe they could have added in a couple more nods to the book.
There could have been a couple more Easter eggs.
Yeah, Easter eggs, exactly, which there were some, but there weren't a million. But other than that, no, I wasn't upset about things.
Okay. No. Now,
thank you for asking.
Yes.
are the resident book expert.
I have another question for you that you should all ponder. Oh. When you're having a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day. Mm-hmm. What do you do to get over that? And what do you do to make yourself happy? <That's fair.
laughs> So much chocolate. So much chocolate. You know, sometimes you're in the horrible, miserable, terrible day kind of mode, and you're like, I'm just going to feed into this, and I'm going to eat, and I'm going to sit and listen to sad music, whatever. And sometimes you're in that mood, and you're like, no, this isn't going to get me down. So it all depends. Depends on what kind of horrible, miserable, terrible, awful, dreadful day you're having.
Dimitri,
go ahead. No, I will go ladies first.
All right. I think that I have a couple... they asked these questions a lot in like the junkets for the actors as well, and it was very much about how you have to find your own remedy or what's going to pull you out of it. Mm-hmm. And for me, like, I do say eating, but like, I will make myself a really good meal, or I will go get something that I really like and like. Maybe wouldn't spend the money on a normal steak, but I'm going to go get myself a steak, potatoes, and dessert, and it's going to be great.
Chocolate.
I do. Chocolate. I will. When I'm having a really bad day, sometimes I'll spoil myself. I also, the singing very loud in the car really works really well for me. Drown out a nice drive.
Yep.
A nice drive. Live in California, living close to the beach is always a good outlet.
Dimitri.
Well, for me, I'll go back when living in Massachusetts, growing up in Peabody.
Woo-hoo!
Whenever there was thank you. Thank you for all you Massachusetts out there and people who know Peabody. And it's pronounced Peabody, not Peabody. Screw all you Peabody people.
No offense. Anyway.
In any case, for me, there was a great ice cream place called Russ Treadwell's in Peabody, and it was a banana split.
Mm-hmm.
A banana split could do it. And today, it's still ice cream, but it's got to be like good ice cream, which is hard to find out here. And I'm talking above and beyond Baskin Robbins and Cold Stone.
Yeah.
Like, it's tough.
Even Jennifer Garner said when she's having a bad day, her family just drops everything, eats ice cream.
Yeah.
I personally watch blooper reels from films, television. It's something about laughing and releasing those endorphins and being able to laugh and smile. It gets you out of that funk. And physically, it does. It makes you feel better.
Well, let me take your question one more step. Is there a movie that each of you watch that can put you in a better mood?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That'll always make you laugh.
Better mood. This is what's coming to mind is actually Thank You, Disney Company as a whole, because Disney, especially their animated movies, have been some of my go-to films for pretty much every instance. Like, when I feel very sick, when I feel very sad, like, Disney movies have a special place in my heart, so I have to just thank them. It's Definitely, they've been there.
Roxy?
I think it's less, you would think it would be like some great comedies, but usually it's very thought-provoking movies that make me feel like, oh, okay, it's not so bad.
Put your life into perspective.
Yeah, it's like in-depth.
Like Shawshank Redemption.
I want to be the beast.
You know?
You could be in prison.
Yeah, yeah. I'm like, oh, okay, so that's not me, so. It's okay.
As long as you have it worse off than me, my life's okay. How about you, Marissa?
I will admit this, and I'm not afraid to admit this, the Disney film, Parent Trap, Lindsay Lohan, 1998.
Just watched the other day.
It is my favorite all-time film. Another Disney film. But I can watch that movie a million, 2 million and a half times.
Have you ever watched the original?
Yes, of course.
All right, so then what do you like about the Lindsay Lohan over the Brian Keith?
Because I was the same age when that... I was like that age demographic when that film came out.
There's how you're introduced to it.
Yeah, I get it. I'm just like... curious.
It still speaks to me every single time I've seen it. I can quote that whole movie backwards.
Does Anatomy of a Movie have that the host have wandered off the subject button?
Yes, but I'm saying that film always makes me happy. Always makes me happy.
It's a good one. I'm with
you. It's a great one.
And then the Oreos and peanut butter to go alongside. How could you be sad anymore?
I mean, it's pop culture. I love it. Okay.
So those are the movies that can get you through a bad day.
Do you have one before we wrap this on
up? I do. And like you said, like the Disney movies, I've tried to find some of those old Disney movies are hard to find. So whenever I just ordered one today. Now You See Him, Now You Don't, another Kurt Russell classic. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so the Disney movies, but my other movie is, believe it or not, the Neil Simon's Walter Matthau, Jack Lemmon, The Odd Couple. That movie, for whatever its reasons, always makes me laugh. I just love that movie and that pairing. And it's Neil Simon. It's got great dialogue. And it's just hysterical. So,
Before we wrap up, let's just talk a little bit about the music and the soundtrack.
Sure.
We had Kara Storsi and her music. And then we also had Dylan and his band actually performed a song in this film.
Yeah. To me, honestly, I love music. And I always talk about how I'd focus on it. It was very non-memorable. Their songs, I would love to go support them, download them, listen to them. They weren't... The music in this, to me, was fine. It was fine. It was not
It wasn't something that really stuck out as the heart of the film.
Right.
Yeah,
like,
I agree.
It didn't stick out as bad either, though.
It wasn't musically based either. But this film was composed by a good friend, Christoph Beck, who's been here in the studios. I thought that was cool.
Yeah.
I mean, that's cool. And his
range.
He's busy. Yeah.
His suite is in the soundtrack. And, you know, one cool... Oh, go ahead.
No. Go ahead.
No, because you're still on music, because I was just going to go quickly off topic.
Rocks, paper, scissors for it.
No, I'm good.
Well, no, because it was... One other cool thing is that I learned is that the stunt coordinator for this movie was also the stunt coordinator for Avatar. And one of their biggest things
That's interesting.
Pretty cool. And one of his... one of the biggest problems was getting the baby to get marker or that green on the face.
Goodness,
and it says like, he's like, oh my God, there was a lot of luck involved, but getting the baby to put that marker on his face, it was a dark move at the time because it was taking forever. He goes on, but then he says there was this guy, Jimmy, in the costume department who built a rapport with the little baby, and he goes, yeah, he just came up with an idea, sat there, put green marker all over his face so aggressively, the baby thought it was hilarious. It was like, he said the baby was like, he thought he won the lottery, he was explained, and so that's how they were able to get that
How
color.
Did they get him to say Thommy?
That had to be digital.
Yeah.
But nobody, his mouth moved perfectly to that.
That's good ADR.
That's good ADR. But overall, a very fun film.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I buy it.
Yeah.
You buy it?
Yeah. I buy it. I think this would be a great thing to, as I talked about babysitting earlier, this would be a great thing to put on if I was babysitting kids. Something that I wouldn't hate watching and that they would really enjoy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we talked about how it's hard to work with kids and animals, and I feel like the last film that I personally have seen that dealt with that was Cheaper by the Dozen.
Oh, yeah.
I felt like this film had the same beats, the same emotional beats, and it really took me back to that film, Cheaper by the Dozen.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that, but it was a good comparison.
Great family
film.
Not
the original one.
No.
I think that starred Lucille Ball.
No, maybe. Not the original one.
Steve Martin.
Yeah, Steve Martin, 2003.
And Bonnie Hunt, was it?
Bonnie Hunt. Hillary Duff. A lot of Disney people in that film, too.
Yeah.
But,
that sing.
Yes, that you sing. Sarah, last thoughts?
Last thoughts are going to be, I just have to feel, I feel like the look of this movie was bright and cheery and family-oriented, and although it's not making my top Disney movie list, I've been swayed more onto the positive
side. We've converted
side.
Her!
Yes, we did our job. All right.
This movie was a nice, pleasant surprise for me, and it did take me back to my growing up with movies, which was with the Disney movies. And if any of you out there want a little quick list, Barefoot Executive, The Million Dollar Duck, that movie was hysterical, Super Dad, The Apple Dumpling Gang, Freaky Friday, all of these movies, you know, they're great, fun family movies. And if you watch them, you'll see where this movie got its inspiration from. And I think it paid homage just perfectly. And maybe we'll see some more of these kind of movies. I'd love to see this family back, or maybe actors be in other kinds of these kind of Disney movies. It's nice to know that not all every family movie has to be animated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I liked how we had a live action, because I feel like so many movies just animated now.
And again, coming off of movies like Gone Girl, it was a little bit refreshing.
It's a
palate cleanser. Nothing against Gone Girl, yeah. But it's just...
We could breathe.
Yeah.
It's a palate cleanser. I will definitely recommend this film to families, my family. I mean, I think it can speak to a lot of people, because everyone has bad days, no matter what race, sex, age you are. And, you know, it's a great film to really just laugh at yourself and mm-hmm. learn how to overcome obstacles and have a better, turn something negative into something positive.
Yeah, and it can be okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yay!
There we go. All right. Thank you, everyone, for listening to Anatomy of a Movie. We can follow some of us on Twitter. Dimitri, we'll start with you.
At DMovies1701.
Hi, guys. Hashtag Sarah, get a Twitter.
And you can find me everywhere at Roxy Stryer.
You can follow me on Twitter and on Instagram at Serafini TV. You can follow all of us here at Anatomy of a Movie on anatomyofmovie.com and also Movie Talk Nation, where we talk movies. That's awesome, fun stuff. Follow us on Twitter at Movie Anatomy, and we will keep talking to you for our next dissection.
Yay!
Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the rest of the Anatomy of a Movie staff, we would like to thank you for listening and subscribing to the show. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to email or tweet us. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been Anatomy of a Movie.